The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Did you miss the horn section? You might have missed the horn section a little bit, whether you'd like to admit it or not. This is the Next Pats podcast. We are back after a brief hiatus. There is plenty to talk about, and we're going to do that right here, continuing our look at the Patriots and how they're going to look in 2019. We've been doing this for months now. We led you up to the draft. We led you up to free agency. Now we're in the slow time of the NFL season. Everybody's on vacation. Players are starting their workouts. Maybe they'll take a quick break after that and come back for training camp. Coaches, scouts, everybody in the league, associated with the league, people in the league office, sort of take a little bit of a breather now. And then everybody's back on that wheel at the end of July for training camp and through early February. But we're going to be coming at you with podcasts. You better believe it. And we do have some things to talk about. Have a quick conversation with Duke Dawson that I want to get to. I find him to be a really interesting player on this Patriots 90-man roster right now. Obviously, a second-round pick last year. Where is his place on this team, in this defense this year? How is he feeling about his role moving forward? We will get to Duke Dawson. We will also get to my most recent 53-man roster projection, the post mini camp edition. Obviously, that's not real football. We know that, right? No pads, no contact of any kind. However, plenty of observations to pull from that week of Patriots mini camp, and it allows us to sort of extrapolate on some of those observations that we've had in the 53-man roster projection forum. So we will get to that, but I do want to start with some sound from Tony Romo. Obviously, CBS color commentator extraordinaire, universally praised, it feels like, through his first couple of seasons as a color commentator alongside Jim Nantz. Aside from the occasional critique of the fact that he just, you know, likes to make noises sometimes as things are going on like this, Jim. Oh, did he get it? I don't know. Other than that, he's great. I mean, I am with everyone who universally seems to be singing his praises. I think he does a very good job. So it was interesting to hear from him because he was here in our area. He was in Rhode Island. He's still in Rhode Island, potentially, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, taking part in the Northeast Amateur Invitational. He's obviously an avid golfer, a rabid golfer. Guy is trying to be essentially a semi-professional golfer. And so he was at, or he is at, again, depending on when you're listening to this, the Northeast Amateur Invitational at the Wanamoisett Country Club. That's down in Rumford, Rhode Island. He took the opportunity, took the time out early in the week to sit in with a bunch of us and answer a handful of Patriots-related questions. And so we'll get to some of those now. I was interested, first and foremost, in his thoughts on Rob Gronkowski, because Rob Gronkowski continues to be in the public eye. We continue to talk about that guy. I think there are plenty of people. I don't think I would include myself in this camp. While I'm always one to point out that we should never say never, a lot of people out there still feel as though Rob Gronkowski could be coming back later in the year. Tony Romo has a friend in Jason Witten, might be his best friend. Remember those guys going on vacation together all the time when they were playing together, who left the game, tight end, came back, is going to be part of that Dallas Cowboys offense in 2019. And so I asked Tony Romo, retired veteran himself, do you think Rob Gronkowski is going to come back because the itch is going to be too strong? Here's what he said.
I think everybody gets the itch. It's whether or not you want to, you know, go back and put your body through. I mean, a lot of it's just, it's mostly like every player who leaves still wants to play. It's just A, you want to put your body through that. B, are you moved on in your life mentally? You know, and so it's like if he does and he gets in and starts enjoying what he's got going on, I don't think it'll be that big a deal for him. If not, you know, it'll be a tougher tug. And then on top of it, if he can play and come back, you know, more power to him.
I did find that interesting that everyone gets the itch, and it's not a shock. And I believe Rob Gronkowski will get that itch. And it's the second part of Romo's answer there that is probably most important, which is, do you feel as though your body can handle it? How are you feeling? What is your body telling you? And I just think Rob Gronkowski's body has told him so much over the years and is probably still talking to him about last season that he's going to have less itch than most when it comes to be September, October. And he is going to remember, it is going to be fresh in his mind. I think the fact that he played through as much as he did and that it really brought him down emotionally to go through some of the things that he went through, I think that is going to linger with him. And while he may get the itch, I don't anticipate Rob Gronkowski coming back to the New England Patriots. We also asked him about Tom Brady. Minicamp just broke. A lot of question marks about this offense. As good as everybody looks in minicamp because you're playing in shorts and in t-shirts, a lot of questions specifically about that tight end position. The roster, we think, looks the way it's basically going to look come training camp, and there doesn't seem to be a tight end on the horizon that's going to save the day for this position group. Never mind the fact that there are plenty of question marks in the receiver room as well outside of Julian Edelman and N'Keal Harry. A couple of promising veteran acquisitions, some younger players who could make some noise, and we'll get to those guys. But again, not a lot of surefire contributors at that receiver spot. So between tight end and receiver, if you were Tom Brady, Tony Romo, would you be looking at this thing and biting your nails down to the quick because you have no idea who you're going to be throwing to in critical situations outside of Julian Edelman?
Yeah, there's a long way to go. I think Tom's probably not, he doesn't be too worried. I think that he's has enough skins on the wall to know that he's, as long as he's upright and taking a snap, they're going to have a chance. And, you know, he's the rarest of guys in the fact that you've seen him over the years, he'll make it work. One way or another, he'll find a way to, like, move the chains, and they'll come up with new ideas, new ways. Him, Josh, Bill, I mean, they're at the top when it comes to the mental side of the game.
Romo might be right there. That sounds a little on the extreme side to me, and I'm sure he didn't mean it that way, to be taken at face value. The fact that as long as Tom Brady is standing upright, the Patriots are going to be the favorites to go to the Super Bowl from the AFC or anything like that. But it's probably true. The Patriots' success will be tied to Tom Brady as long as he is playing. And I think this year is no different. I think even with the question marks, and again, we'll talk about some of the pieces at tight end and receiver when we get into the roster projection, but I think they're good enough. And I think they have the potential to be better than that, especially at receiver. I'm a big fan of N'Keal Harry's. We talked about him before the draft. We talked about him after the draft. We talked to plenty of people about him. A lot of promise in this kid and really intriguing physical ability. Can he learn the offense? Can he understand what it is Tom Brady's trying to tell him to do on a snap-to-snap basis? We'll see. But that group, I think, is going to make up for some of what you would have lost statistically in not having Rob Gronkowski and really not having an incredibly formidable replacement ready to go in Gronkowski's stead. And that might be generous. So we'll see as far as that goes. But Romo says if he was Brady, no problem. No problem. He's calm, cool, collected, just like he is on those broadcasts. Last thing I wanted to play for you from Romo was the question I asked him about Bill Belichick. And when we spoke to Romo, the Caserio news was still very fresh. That storyline had not really died down at all. It is still ongoing, it feels like, in some ways, though it is mostly simmered to this point. And one of the interesting facets of the Caserio story is it does, I think, if you dig deep enough into it, raise the question, how much longer is Bill Belichick going to do this? Because if you're Nick Caserio and you understood where Bill Belichick stood on that front and you knew when he might be walking away, you might be inclined to stick around, and maybe you'd never be interested in the Texans job. Maybe you just would foresee yourself being the guy in the Patriots front office for years to come. But to me, I've always said, from my own observations, from my conversations, from the answers that I've received and the questions I've asked Belichick about this topic, it doesn't seem like he's slowing down anytime soon. And I think the people that are around him and that work with him and work under him probably feel the same way. I'm not sure many people know if or when Bill Belichick does plan to retire. And so I asked Tony Romo, somebody who, you know, not like he is a Belichick confidant, but somebody who covers a lot of Patriots games, who broadcasts a lot of Patriots games, and does get to sit in with Bill Belichick on these pre-production meetings that are very relaxed, where there is typically a lot of information being exchanged to help with the broadcast. It's a different Belichick than we typically see in front of the cameras on a weekly basis or an almost daily basis during the season. And so I asked Romo, what do you think when it comes to Bill Belichick and his career? Is this somebody that to you will continue to work for years and years to come here? Or do you ever get the sense, do you have the feeling that he maybe sees the light at the end of his football tunnel, and we should be savoring these moments watching Bill Belichick because we may not have that many more of them?
Yeah, I feel like there's rare guys in life that just kind of who they are. It's not as if he's working. I relate him to, like, you know, I call it like something I really like, attack throwing the football. It's, I mean, every day of your life for like 10 years, it was literally, you could not do it, I felt like. With Bill, I just feel like that's just what he wants to do. He wants to actually work that hard. Not because he thinks he's working hard, it's a joyful obsession for him. So it brings him joy to do this and to compete, to try and prove to the challenges that they face. I think that's just makes it more fun for him. Anything. It doesn't make it harder and want you to walk away. I think it's the opposite. I think he would enjoy that aspect. And so, to me, I think he could, if he wanted to, he'll do this all the way until, you know, we put him in the ground. So I think he's that good. He's the rarest of rares, and he's brilliant.
Now, the anecdote that always comes up when this topic is brought about is Bill Belichick told NFL Films. He told the cameras. He was there in his car driving to Gillette Stadium. He said it himself. He doesn't want to be Marv Levy coaching into his 70s. He didn't think that was going to be the case back then. This was the 2009 season, so a decade ago. That wasn't going to be him. But here we are. Bill Belichick still going strong. He seems as energetic as ever. He's 67 years old, just turned 67 in April. And he is still unanimously the top coach in the league. And he is still the general manager, and he's running the front office, and he's making the final, you know, he's making the final calls on all things Patriots. And it doesn't seem like he's slowing down. And I think Romo gets that sense. A lot of us that are around the team get that sense. And while we should still be savoring these moments as we get to watch one of the best of all time, maybe the best of all time at his job, do his job, I think we're going to be able to watch him do his thing for years and years to come here. I'm not sure when the end is going to be, but it doesn't feel like it's coming anytime soon. So I did think that was interesting to hear Romo again, somebody who gets Belichick when he's a little bit more relaxed, yet still in season, still in the moment, still preparing for games, still talking about the gig, he gets Belichick in some of those more candid moments. And so I thought it was just interesting to hear his take on Bill Belichick. Now let's get to one of Bill Belichick's top picks over the course of the last couple of years here. Duke Dawson, second round pick out of Florida in 2018, misses his entire rookie season. He goes on IR to start the year. First of all, he's participating in training camp. He's playing in preseason games. Looks pretty good. Comes to the Patriots with the label of being a versatile defensive back, somebody who could play inside, play outside, played a little bit of safety at Florida, basically played every position in the secondary at different points during his collegiate career, played with a lot of talented guys on that defense, a lot of pros on that defense, and the Patriots had their eye on him for multiple seasons. He eventually makes himself draft eligible, and they go and they take him in the second round. Some people weren't sure he was a second round pick at the time he was drafted. He didn't get to do anything in his rookie year to prove those people wrong, that he was worthy of a second round selection, because he injured his hamstring in training camp. He mostly played in the slot from my observations in these preseason games, which is how much we can take from those, who knows, but that's where they had him slotted in, pun intended, essentially. He pulls his hamstring during training camp, during a special teams drill of all things, and basically loses his season. He goes on IR to start the year. They designate him as a player to return. He does return to the active roster, but he doesn't play a single snap. He doesn't dress for a game, and he doesn't play. And so I find this player to be one of the more interesting on the Patriots roster, A, because of how his career started, and because of some of the big swings the Patriots have taken in the second round, where they have had these huge, huge hits, we know. Rob Gronkowski, Sebastian Vollmer, Patrick Chung, I think you could argue was a hit, even though he left and came back, and that was really when he hit his stride here in New England. But they also have these incredible misses, Jordan Richards being the most recent example, Cyrus Jones, injury there, but that obviously was something that didn't work out, much more significant injury than what Duke Dawson was dealing with last year. So that's part of the reason why Dawson is so interesting to me, A, but B, you look at his opportunity in 2019 and you might wonder where it's going to come. Stephon Gilmore obviously is your number one on the outside. You've got either Jason McCourty or J.C. Jackson as the outside guy, quote unquote, outside guys opposite Gilmore. Jonathan Jones has established himself as an important part of this defense, somebody who made significant contributions in 2018, even though I'm not sure they went into the season with that plan for him. I think at one point in time, the plan for Jonathan Jones was be a special teams ace. And he was right on track to do that, and he remains a special teams ace in some respects. He might not be the Pro Bowler year after year that Matthew Slater is and has been, but very good as a gunner, very good kick and punt coverage. He might be the fastest guy on the team. So Jonathan Jones is going to have a role in this team, and it might be in the slot. They just drafted another corner, Juwan Williams, who is a much different type than Duke Dawson, than Jonathan Jones. He's not going to be a slot guy unless he's covering big slots and man-to-man coverage, or he's covering tight ends. But it's just another body, seemingly ahead of Duke Dawson on the depth chart in some ways. So how is Duke Dawson going to be used? That's one of the things I'm really kind of locked in on this training camp. I do think he's going to make the team. I've seen some people suggest that there's a chance he's not on the 53-man roster. I think that is too early to bail on a second-round pick, and I think even Bill Belichick, somebody who we know has no problem just parting with anybody, regardless of their name or where they were drafted. I don't think you're going to find an example of Bill Belichick parting ways with a second round pick going into his second season. Somebody may look that up, call me out on it, and tell me I'm wrong. But I remember doing some research at the time that Cyrus Jones was going into his second year. And it was a similar situation where the guy basically did nothing, hurt the team on a couple of occasions, in fact. And he was back for a second season. So I just, that's, in my opinion, not going to happen. Duke Dawson's going to be here. The question is, to what extent is he able to contribute? I had a chance to talk to Duke after the last minicamp practice, as a matter of fact, and I thought he had a good 3 days. He made a play on Wednesday where he broke up a pass, very nearly had a pick six that had the defensive sideline at the time. This was an 11-on-11 period. Defensive sideline just lose their minds collectively, including Gerard Mayo, linebacker's coach, who was right there. I happened to be watching him at the time, and he freaked out. Everybody in the sidelines freaks out. Good play by Duke Dawson. He makes another play the following day. He's deep down the field in coverage on Philip Dorsett, gets his hand on the football again, breaks up the pass. So he's making statements day after day, it seemed like, in minicamp. And again, it's just minicamp, but this is how you sort of build momentum. We remember Malcolm Butler making plays early in his Patriots career in the spring. And then in training camp, it was a play a day, a play a day, a play a day. Well, you're going to hear Duke Dawson say something similar in my conversation with him. Again, last day of minicamp, I asked him about that one play that he had on Dorsett in coverage. He makes the pass breakup just to try to get a feel for how confident he was after three, again, what I thought were pretty good days.
I mean, it feels great to come out here and make a play a day. That's how I look at it. That's how I approach it. Come out here and make a play a day, you know what I'm saying? It builds on from there. Be consistent each and every day. And that's what I harp on myself about. That's what the coaches harp on me about, just being consistent.
You feel like even though, you know, your second-round pick, that's like your high-end pick, you feel like something comes with that, you know, from us, from afar, looking at it, like, okay, like, you know, he's going to have a job, he's going to have a role. But do you look at it differently? Like, hey, I got to prove some things out here to make sure that I'm earning my gig.
I won't say proving it to nobody else. I mean, it's as far as me proving to myself and what I can do, you know what I'm saying? Of course, it's going to be outside noise and this and that, but at the end of the day, you only control what you can control, and the only thing I can control is coming out and performing each and every day and bettering myself.
And in that second answer there, where we're getting at the idea of entitlement for second-round picks, you really sensed none, or at least I sensed none, from Duke Dawson. It was, I think, a sort of quiet confidence in a way, because, you know, he's not assuming that he's going to lose his job. I didn't get it that feel from him at all. He's not assuming he's going to lose his job if he doesn't show up and look like a Pro Bowler in minicamp and in training camp. But he does want to show to himself that he can play. There's some confidence there, but he needs to remember what it feels like. He had never lost a season to injury in his football career. High school, college, pro. He told me he'd never really even missed two games consecutively before. So last year was a shock to the system in some ways for Dawson. And I talked to him throughout the course of the year. He really worked at keeping his spirits up, because there were times last year, late last year, obviously he had been activated. They decided to bring him back off of IR and put him on the roster. He just didn't play. So he was healthy enough to go. And he really, from my understanding, he was pretty healthy by the time he had a few weeks left, even on his IR stint. So this was somebody who was healthy enough to play for a significant portion of the season. And really all he was able to do was practice. It's a very new feeling for him. And now, as he approaches this season, I got the sense that there's a little extra motivation there to prove to the team, to prove to anybody watching, again, to prove to himself that he is the player he thinks he is. Okay, so you know I feel like Duke Dawson is going to be on this roster. Who else from the Patriots secondary made my most recent 53-man roster projection? It's a good question. They're loaded at cornerback. I had Gilmore, McCourty, Jonathan Jones, J.C. Jackson, Jawan Williams, and Duke Dawson as my six corners. I left out Keon Crossan, who is a very good special teamer already, I think. made a lot of plays last year for them in the kicking game. He's somebody who I think can grow defensively, and I think they feel like has the athleticism certainly to become a factor in that defensive backfield. But he was just sort of the odd man out. You'll see there are a few other positions that I addressed that others may not, in terms of who stays and who goes. But in this version, and I could certainly see it changing, of course it will change, Keon Crossan got left off, but it's a very, very deep group there, and that was a tough leave for me. One of my last quote-unquote cuts when we put this together. At safety, Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung, Daron Harmon, Terrence Brooks, Nate Ebner not on the list, but that, again, I could very easily see changing. Ebner was injured through minicamp. We saw him in sweats on the final day, just observing, and so not sure exactly what he is coming back from, but somebody who I do think is going to have to earn his spot. Terrence Brooks was somebody they went out and signed pretty quickly, a former Jet, somebody who is a core special teamer, and somebody who I think will push Nate Ebner for a roster spot. There's probably room for both, depending on injuries and depending on how training camp plays out. But again, in this roster projection, Terrence Brooks is the most recent core special teamer to catch Bill Belichick's eye. At linebacker, I have six guys at linebacker. Dont'a Hightower, Kyle Van Noy, Juwan Bentley, Jamie Collins, Alandon Roberts, and Brandon King, who we know is a special teamer. I look at this linebacker group, and I look at their defense in general, and I think, guys, and we've been talking about this, we talked about it with the Chase Winovich pick, I think we're going to see a lot of 3-4 type of looks this year. Now, what does that mean? It doesn't mean we're going to see a ton of classic 3-4, because there's very few instances in this day and age in the NFL where you're playing with seven-man fronts to begin with. But if you have 3-4 types of looks, maybe you're using a nose tackle pretty frequently. Maybe you're using a 5-technique defensive end pretty frequently. Maybe you're using two of those with two outside linebackers. Smaller pass rusher types who can also drop into coverage. Maybe you're using linebackers off the ball that are a little bit bigger, that can handle those guards one-on-one. If you go back and you listen to our podcast with Gerard Mayo, now Patriots inside linebackers coach, on what it takes to play linebacker in Bill Belichick's defense, he will go through the 3-4 for you. And he will explain that the off-the-ball linebacker roles are very different, 3-4-4-3. I look at somebody like Alandon Roberts, who, to get back to the 53 projection, is probably on the bubble for a lot of people. But to me, he, even though he's a little bit undersized, he's a pretty powerful guy, and he is one of those run-first types that seem to fit, in my opinion, in that 3-4 style. Jamie Collins, I guess, sort of interesting, because he doesn't seem like a 3-4 linebacker to me. So, you know, one side of my mouth, I'm talking about 3-4s and you need heavy linebackers and guys that can take on guards one-on-one. And then out the other side of my mouth, I'm saying Jamie Collins is going to make the roster. Jamie Collins is not really a run game player, though, in my opinion. So even if you're liking that 3-4 look, if you're Bill Belichick, if you're Gerard Mayo, you're not really using Jamie Collins as a 3-4 linebacker. He's not sturdy enough to play off the ball, in my opinion, and he's really not setting an edge in the running game. Maybe you would just have him out there in obvious passing situations. You bring him off the edge as a pass rusher. Maybe you bring him up the middle, as we've seen him do so often. I think you match him up with running backs and tight ends, and you have him help you in coverage. I think he's still athletic enough to do that. I think Jamie Collins could give you a lot. On the edge, Michael Bennett, Dietrich Wise, John Simon, Chase Winovich. I did not include Derek Rivers, although in a 3-4 front, he would be sort of a classic 3-4 outside linebacker. I think Chase Winovich is going to kind of take that spot from Derek Rivers, but maybe this year they play more 3-4. They feel like they need more of those types. John Simon, I would lump in as that type of player as well. Maybe they just want to have a surplus of outside linebackers and they keep Derek Rivers. Michael Bennett, Dietrich Wise, those guys aren't going to be quote-unquote edges in a 3-4. They're probably going to be more closer to that 5-technique, 3-4 defensive end, but both those guys pretty versatile and I think could do it. We're going to rip through defensive tackle, Lawrence Guy, Mike Pennell, Adam Butler, Danny Shelton. Pennell and Shelton in a 3-4, those guys would be your noses. I think you probably need two if that's what your front of choice is going to be. Lawrence Guy, again, 5-technique, Adam Butler, passing situation specialist. Those guys are locks in my opinion. Let's go over to the offense. I'm going three quarterbacks. We've talked about this. Danny Etling is going to be the odd guy out there. I think you do keep Brian Hoyer because of what he gives you as a veteran, but also because you have some money tied into Hoyer. You're going with five running backs: Michelle, White, Burkhead, Harris, and Bolden. Not much to explain there. I do have Berrios and Maurice Harris making the 53 in this projection. I think both of those guys played well during minicamp, and I think they both give you something that you don't really have. Maurice Harris is a big-bodied, versatile guy, maybe sort of Brandon LaFell-esque, Brandon Lloyd-esque, although Brandon Lloyd was probably more of a classic X. Harris can play a little bit inside, but not a burner, but somebody who looked to have good body control, good hands, and Berrios, your classic slot, which you really don't have outside of Julian Edelman if you wanted to play him in there, and even he's not a classic slot. He's more of a versatile guy. Tight end, you have Lacoste, you have Izzo, Devlin, the fullback I include in this group, and I'm including Andrew Beck. I'm doing it, guys. Andrew Beck, undrafted, rookie tight end, not really a tight end, more of a fullback. I think it's important to have insurance in case anything happens to James Devlin. So if Andrew Beck can play special teams, I would not be shocked to see him make this roster. He made a good chunk of change as a signing bonus as an undrafted free agent. And again, the fullback is important to this offense on a week-to-week basis. If you lost James Devlin on the first play of the game offensively, you'd have to scrap a significant percentage of that week's game plan, I would think. Maybe Josh McDaniels would tell me I'm stupid, but it just feels smart to me, and Andrew Beck was working out with the fullbacks during minicamp. That was something we did not know was going to happen going in. At tackle, Wynn, Cannon, Kajust, interior guys, Andrews, Tooney, Mason, Karras, Froholt. There you have it. There's your 53-man roster. There is your next Pats podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back again very soon. Don't worry. I know we took a little bit of a hiatus, but we are coming back at your ear holes very soon with more to digest in terms of everything that's happening with this Patriots team and how it's going to impact them this 2019 season. Thanks again for listening. Subscribe, rate, comment, tell your friends, tell your family, and we'll talk to you very soon.